This is Encounter on VOA. Here's Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Encounter on the Voice of America. On this edition of the program, we revisit the global refugee crisis. Hello again, I'm Carol Castiel. It is estimated that there are more than 65 million people displaced globally, including 21 million refugees. Many are driven by the war in Syria and other conflicts. It is the highest figure since World War II, and a number that has far outpaced the international community's ability to respond. The United Nations estimates that over half the displaced are children. In September, the United Nations convened two high-level summits focused on the multilateral responses to deal with the growing refugee crisis and unmanaged migration flows, the UNGA Summit for Refugees and Migrants and the UN Leaders Summit on Refugees, which was led by U.S. President Barack Obama. Separately, the United States hosted a roundtable with American businesses to catalyze interest in the private sector to commit more to aiding refugees. Well, with us to discuss the state of the refugee crisis and assess results of these international efforts are two distinguished analysts and activists. Bill O'Keefe is Vice President for Government Relations and Advocacy at Catholic Relief Services, an organization founded in 1943 by the Catholic bishops of the United States to assist impoverished and disadvantaged people. And Dr. Dimitrios Papadimitriou. He is a distinguished senior fellow, president emeritus, and co-founder of the Migration Policy Institute. That's a Washington-based policy group dedicated to the study of international migration. He is also president of Migration Policy Institute Europe. That's a nonprofit independent research institute based in Brussels. Both gentlemen join me here at the VOA Broadcast Center in Washington. Gentlemen, welcome to the program.
Thanks so much,
Thank
Carol.
Thank you for having us.
Well, Bill O'Keefe, let me begin with you, the Catholic Relief Services. Briefly, your characterization of the refugee migrant crisis and its challenges today, and certainly you can talk about what your organization, Catholic Relief Services, has done and is doing today to mitigate the crisis.
Thanks, Carol. I think your introduction mentioned our founding in 1943, and in some ways for us, this is a return to our roots. In 1943, we were responding to this massive refugee crisis at the end of the Second World War, and that's the same kind of scale that we're responding to now. In all the countries around Syria, so Lebanon, Jordan, Turkey, and then the European countries that have hosted refugees like Greece, Serbia, Macedonia, we have helped over 1.2 million people in the last 5 years since the beginning of the Syria crisis. And we're providing basic needs like food, shelter, you know, kind of basic kitchen supplies that people need when they are on the move, hygiene kits. But a lot of what we're doing is in these refugee hosting countries that have been very generous. I'm talking about Lebanon and Turkey and Jordan, each taken more than 1 million refugees. We've helped families to try to reestablish a normal life. And that's a big challenge and one that's a challenge for the whole refugee system. But we're very proud of the progress that we've made, again, in the midst of this really overwhelming crisis.
Turning to you, Dimitrios Papadimitriou, with the Migration Policy Institute. Talk about your characterization of the crisis today and what your organization is doing.
Well, the crisis is, as you already said, the largest, on par with what we saw at the end of the Second World War. I think what has motivated people to act now, rather than a year or two or three ago, is the fact that that crisis has actually reached European shores. Bill's organization, of course, works over there. And as a result, you know, they spend a lot of their effort and money and goodwill trying to protect people and care for them and help them maintain themselves over there. The reason that we have had all this attention, I'm convinced, is because the European nations realized that they were indeed, by proximity, by geography, part of where these things were happening. And this is what led to UN meetings that you referred to earlier. My concern and my organization's concern is that if the sense of a crisis begins to wane, then some of the things that these leaders got together in September to do may never materialize. We have this terrible habit of promising a lot of things in the heat of passion or when the television cameras are on us that we don't deliver on. And I can give you a couple of examples. There were $4.7 or so billion dollars that were committed to the crisis. Well, every country had the right, and in fact that's what most countries did, to certainly recommit money that they committed in early February in a similar London event. And I suspect that very few dollars or euro of this 4.7 billion are new dollars. Same thing with refugee resettlement spaces. They said, the heads of government, that they were going to double the number of refugees that are resettled. Well, however hard it may be for them to sort of back off, I suspect that many of these countries are not going to deliver the spots, the spaces that they have promised.
Turning back to you, Bill O'Keefe, to pick up on what Dimitri said with regard to these summits, to what extent you think they achieved what they set out to achieve with respect to pledges, commitments. So we're talking about the summits that I mentioned in the introduction, the UNGA Summit for Refugees and Migrants, and then the Leaders Summit that President Obama hosted. What's your reaction?
Let me start with President Obama's summit. I think, as Dimitri mentioned, there were significant pledges of money, commitments to address the needs of another million children, to provide education, to help a million refugees get employment, which is extremely important. So those are great pledges, but we're in a global system where pledges are for pledging, not for doing, and we need to do. And so we were satisfied with the President's summit in terms of the commitments, but it's all about the delivery, and that's a really important point. In terms of the UN General Assembly summit, I think we were a little less positive about that in our analysis. First of all, the systemic reforms that are really required to more effectively and efficiently develop the kind of assistance that responds to the changed refugee environment now, those systemic issues were not addressed. So it was an important gathering, but there is a lot of work to reform and update the refugee and humanitarian system that now needs to happen.
What kinds of systemic reforms do you think are necessary to address the challenge?
Obviously, the political system that has failed so dismally, which is why these crises continue to fester, that has been inadequately addressed. The second thing is that the system still is organized around a short-term humanitarian vision. It's as if we think that people are fleeing and they're going to be where they flee to for a couple of months. It turns out that your average refugee is a refugee for 19 years on average. That's a generation. And so the system needs to adjust to that reality and provide education and livelihoods and the opportunity for people to live a more normal life where they find themselves. And then finally, the United Nations plays a critical role in terms of coordinating humanitarian assistance. But there's a need to streamline that assistance so that the UN is no longer a donor, a coordinator, and an implementer. So more transparency and more accountability for how money flows through the system is needed to make the system as effective and efficient as possible.
Turning to you, Dimitris Papadimitriou, to talk about what you think needs to be done at the systemic level to address this major challenge. Do you agree with Bill O'Keefe that the UN summit did not necessarily address these systemic reforms and that they need to be addressed?
I certainly agree and subscribe to all three points that Bill made. The only area in which I am not in disagreement, but I don't know if the degree of skepticism focuses on the same thing, is the area in which that somehow the UN can, through some accident, be the place where many of those things are going to be fixed. I don't have an alternative. My alternative is an old-fashioned one, in the sense that the states that actually take the lead are the ones that fear that they will be most impacted or affected by a crisis, and we should help the states actually lead. I do not believe that a universal organization like the UN can ever reach agreement on anything but the least common denominator. And this is what we saw in the General Assembly in the September events. There were things that, just as Bill said, that are promising. And one of them is a pact with Ethiopia that would create, you know, essentially a physical space in which refugees could be employed. And products that are produced with at least 30% participation of refugee workers will receive preferential treatment, exports, etc., etc. We have to start small, test ideas, put all of our resources together, and I'm not talking only about money, but beyond money, we're going to have to think horizontally across government and say to the government, what can we do together as government? How about if we adjust trade laws? This way we can give preferential treatment to products that are produced by refugees. How about if the education department begins to invest in teacher training over there that will help children in particular get back to school, because an awful lot of those children have been out of school for years. The next generation, who is going to put Syria back together again whenever, hopefully not in the distant future, Syria, sort of the war dissipates and we need to put it back together? It's not going to be us. It's going to be Syrians. These are the hard things that we ought to be thinking about. Sometimes I feel ashamed of ourselves. Food shortages, for God's sake. You know, there should be absolutely no circumstances under which rich nations should not fully fund the World Food Organization to feed refugees. These are shameful things, and we pay attention to Syria, which I understand has about a fifth of all refugees and about a fifth of all internally displaced or a sixth of all internally displaced people. But as Bill said, you have camps in Africa holding 700, 800, 900, a million people that nobody ever hears about, where you have second-generation children and families that were born in these refugee camps. So if we're going to get serious, development agencies will have to work together with humanitarian agencies. They will have to understand what needs to be done differently. We're going to have to experiment. We're going to lose some money. Let's lose some money through failed experiments rather than simply losing money through corruption and fraud. And let's try to really address the whole problem, not just Syria. And not a single voice was raised to basically say, excuse me, what if we try to do something about Syria itself? The places that produce all these numbers of people that are responsible for the chaos. Let's try to put more political resources in making certain that places like Egypt and Nigeria don't come apart. If these countries explode, then how are we going to deal with these things? And this is really the conversation that we refuse to have, because that's a costly one. That's a difficult one.
Indeed. We'll have more on that in just a moment. But first, you're listening to Encounter on The Voice of America. My guests are Bill O'Keefe. He's Vice President for Government Relations and Advocacy at Catholic Relief Services, based in Baltimore, Maryland. And Dr. Dimitrios Papadimitriou, Distinguished Senior Fellow and President Emeritus of the Migration Policy Institute, a think tank based here in Washington. We're discussing the outcome of the recent UN refugee summits and how they can mitigate the global refugee migrant challenge. This is a reminder that our Encounter podcast is available for free download on iTunes. You can find the download by clicking on our iTunes tab on the website at voanews.com/encounter. You may also follow me on Twitter at Carol Castiel VOA or connect with us on Facebook. Here's a shout out to Augustus Kwabi. He's a loyal listener from Ghana. If you want to hear your name on the air, please send an email to encounter@voanews.com or like us and leave a comment on our Facebook page. Well, turning back to you, Bill O'Keefe, I do want to address the political challenge because, as Dimitri said, this is the hardest one. So I would like to know whether, with regard to Syria, the Syrian conflict, notwithstanding the smaller numbers, it is really an epicenter of the refugee crisis today, although not the only one. To what extent are you seeing any efforts to mitigate the root of the problem, and how important do you think that that is?
I think it's the most important thing. The lesson that Dimitri articulated so clearly is that political problems allowed to fester just turn into a system-wide infection, and before you know it, that infection spreads and you have a public health crisis, I mean, to use that analogy. So Secretary Kerry, the Secretary of State, has certainly made efforts at diplomacy, but to say that the full will and credit of the United States is behind those efforts, I think would be an overstatement. And we believe every effort needs to be made to resolve the Syria crisis diplomatically, because people are going to keep fleeing and dying as long as the political disagreements which lead to these kinds of situations are allowed to continue. And that's true for the rest of the world. I, a week and a half ago, was in the Ukraine. There are 2 million displaced people in Ukraine. Who would have known? You never hear about it. Those 2 million are part of that 65 million people who are displaced around the world, and it's another huge political crisis that has turned into a humanitarian one. So I really, I think Dimitri's points are extremely important, and I think we have a tendency, all of us as human beings and as Americans, I would say, to only think about things when they're a crisis and they're on the news, and we have to have the staying power and the resilience to address these problems over the long run, to think about how to solve them through better systems and through greater diplomacy and hard work, and there's just no substitute for that.
Well, turning back to you, Dimitrios Papadimitriou, we're talking about states that have veto-wielding power, you know, in the UN Security Council, Russia. Many see Russia as an aggressor now on the world stage, basically upending the post-World War II order by the invasion and annexation of Crimea, which was part of Ukraine, the entry into Syria, basically to prop up Bashar al-Assad, who is probably the root of the problem, attacking his own people, helping to fuel the growth of the so-called Islamic State. What do you see on the horizon with respect to really attacking the root of the problem that is causing so many people to flee from their homelands?
Certainly, Russia is going to be at the center of all of this for the future period. The objective of Mr. Putin clearly was to reinsert himself in Middle Eastern politics. And he wanted to basically notify everyone that Russia is back and nothing will happen in the region without Russia being in the middle of the table. Now, he's gone beyond that. He's gone to the point where he's the only leader and Russia the only power that is supporting Assad. And that needs to be broken. It is the Russian Air Force that enables Assad to do the things that he is doing to his own people.
That is true.
So we need to find a way for Assad and his henchmen, who are often his own family, and whatever comes out of it will be odious, but to be protected, as it were, for the rest of their lives. And this is going to require not only deft diplomacy, it will also require cracking a bit of the whip. In other words, you're going to have some things that are much tougher than what we've put on the table in terms of what we might be willing to do. And the we here cannot just be the United States. The fact of the matter is, we are there partly because we have messed things up in the entire region for a long time, but also partly because the Europeans are not carrying their weight in all of this. So if there is a need to lead again, and I don't mean a war, but to be as one, to invest real resources and political resources and be tough with Russia and Mr. Putin, because this is the language that he is likely to understand, that's what we need to do. Mr. Erdogan, before everything went, you know, broke, as it were,
the Turkish president
in Turkey, had some ideas which we should have supported then, which is create space, physical space, and then keep expanding from that physical space in which people could be protected. There's got to be a way in which we can just guarantee safety of people and keep pushing outward from there. Otherwise, Assad will continue to kill his own people in large numbers with extreme impunity. And he can only do that because Putin and his air force are guaranteeing that he will succeed in that. And we need to really have a diplomacy that has several different elements. Deal-making is part of it, but once more, getting to be a little tougher on behalf of all of the European nation member states.
Back to you, Bill O'Keefe. Speaking of the European member states, we have to laud the work of German Chancellor Angela Merkel, who has taken in so many refugees fleeing predominantly from Syria, but not only. But of course, she is under a great deal of pressure, backlash from some of the far-right parties. This is constraining her ability to take in more refugees. Now, of course, Papadimitriou spoke about a political role for Europe. They have this deal between the European Union and Turkey. What is your take on that particular agreement, which allows for every Syrian refugee sent back to Turkey, another Syrian would be resettled in the EU directly from refugee camps in Turkey? Again, it's more of a band-aid. We're not really attacking the root of the problem, as both of you have suggested we need to do. But how is that plan working?
It was great to see any collective effort by the European Union, because the inability of the European Union to get out ahead of the problem of refugees coming to Europe led to the size and scale and rapid development of that summer of a million refugees coming up into Germany. And so on the one hand, it was great to see something. On the other hand, though, there are 58,000 people stranded in Greece right now. There's 4,000 or 5,000 stranded in Serbia. The agreement froze lines and trapped people behind those lines in a way that is an incomplete solution. And so we have a lot of questions about the agreement and its implementation. I want to get back to something, though, Dimitri mentioned, which is about education and our concern about the lost generation of Syrian children and other refugees and our responsibility to help to educate those kids where they are and then to help them address the trauma that they've been through, which is something Catholic Relief Services and other groups focus on, helping kids who have been through a war to deal with that experience, enter into school, so that in the hoped-for peace, they'll be able to rebuild their country and play a constructive role. And I can't overestimate the importance of that. The last thing I just wanted to say in response to your question is, we have our own problem here in the United States in terms of our attitude towards refugees, particularly Syrians. And I think that I always, having had the opportunity to speak with refugee women, children, and men in Lebanon and Jordan and Greece and Serbia and Macedonia, I'm struck by how those refugees are fleeing the same people that we're worried about in terms of terrorists. They're not the terrorists. They're fleeing the terrorists that we are concerned about. And I think we have to keep in mind, we're talking about women and children and young men who have been subjected to years of systematic bombing, barrel bombing, artillery fighting, many of whom moved a couple of times within Syria before making the decision to try to leave Syria. They've been through an amazing amount of trauma and difficulty, and we have a responsibility here to address those needs.
Turning back to you as we close the program, Dimitris Papadimitriou, we are seeing some rhetoric here in the United States, which is rather troubling. A country of immigrants now, very skeptical of these people fleeing depredations of their lands, whether Bashar al-Assad or ISIS. And no question that we need to vet people. There are terrorists who could infiltrate these flows. But it's a really sad situation that these refugees, migrants, are almost twice victimized. How do you see the U.S. in terms of its responsibilities?
We're doing better than some people say that we are, and we're doing worse than the idea. The politics of both refugee and migration, or immigration, have gone south. You know, I have done this for 45 years. It reminds me, as a student of history too, of the arguments that we had that led to some fairly negative, extraordinary things about 90 years ago, in 1921 and 1924, when we basically closed the door to most migration. And I'm not predicting that this is what is going to happen, but the pendulum has swung, as it were, against generosity and smart policy. I think it is absolutely essential for the government to always review the security protocols that we have in place. Everybody claims that they are the very best, the real gold standard. That's what the Canadians used in order to be able to get 25,000 people in 4 months. but we need to constantly review them, and we need to reassure the American public that these are as tight as they can possibly be made. So all of these people who come here have been vetted by the best vetting processes that exist.
I'm afraid that's all the time we have on this edition of Encounter. I'd like to thank my guests, Dimitrios Papadimitriou, Distinguished Senior Fellow and President Emeritus of the Migration Policy Institute, and Bill O'Keefe, Vice President for Government Relations and Advocacy at Catholic Relief Services. Thank you, gentlemen, for your terrific insights.
Thank you.
Encounter was produced in Washington. Thanks to Anna Zalewski for booking our guests. Our engineer was Al Santos. I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Encounter on the Voice of America. On this